When it absolutely matters. News Radio 560 KPQ.
Well, a gorgeous Tuesday afternoon, plenty of sunshine, and on the agenda today to put a nice little bow on the 100th Washington State Apple Blossom Festival, we have Festival Administrator Darcy Christofferson. 100. I can't believe it's in the books, and I want to salute to all the folks that made it happen. Darcy, congratulations.
Thank you. I want to salute them, too. They just did a great job. You know, I hats off to not just this year's board of directors, but really last year's board of directors and director general, Andy Kottkamp, and his group had to kind of plan two festivals in a way. And they made a lot of decisions last year to reflect for the 100th. So hats off to both boards. They did a great job making this happen.
I mean, you kind of put that, they kind of had to work on maybe two festivals at once. How much extra pre-production work to go into this year was there? Maybe kind of point out a few things, because it wasn't just another festival this year.
Right. No, there was actually three areas that we literally had to work on last year. And that was, of course, our documentary. You know, we made that decision to do that in January, and not this January, the January before. So it was a $135,000 project, which means we, the festival, had to raise $135,000 separate from what the other $135,000 that we already raised. So that was an interesting process for me to have to go out and start selling this at the busiest time of the festival in 2018. So we did that, and that was huge. And then, of course, adding the past royalty and doing the festival ball. So the 100th committee met all of last year monthly, you know, brainstorming ideas for the ball, how to get all these past royalty in their convertibles. I mean, this was a huge process. And, you know, we had 168 past royalty members as part of the parade. And that was just amazing to work with. We had every year represented from 1961 to 2018. So that's pretty amazing. And that was a huge thing that we really did a lot of the work last year.
Now, how many past royalty might you typically see in a typical grand parade?
Well, we never have past royalty.
Oh, okay. So that was 168.
Right.
Did that surprise you that many came back for this?
Yes and no. I think I knew that we would have every year pretty much represented, but to have all three from each year practically was a little overwhelming. It was just amazing. And, you know, if you're a Facebook person, you've got to go to our Facebook page and others. Just the feeling that they had coming home and being a part of that parade, and really just for their families too. I think, you know, I said this at the ball, is being in royalty, and I don't want to sound goofy, but being a part of the royalty program, it's like a sisterhood. And you can't explain the experience to anyone. Nobody gets it unless you're involved in it. And you just learn so much about this great place that we live, and you learn so much about the people that live in it, and you learn a lot about yourself. And you have these amazing people that follow you from the time that you're royalty to where you are now. And, you know, it's just an awesome experience. And to be able to come home and feel like royalty again, which they did. I mean, I was in the beer garden on Saturday night, and tons of past royalty were in there, and they were treated just like royalty, like they never left. And that's pretty neat.
We're talking with Darcy Christofferson, the festival administrator. The 100th edition is in the books. Can you share a couple of behind-the-scenes things that those of us that aren't involved directly with Apple Blossom wouldn't have known or seen with the grandchildren of the originator of this event, now 100 years in the books, were just maybe impressed by Wenatchee or this festival. They were just gracious to come all the way here from New Zealand to participate as our grand marshals. I caught up with them as they were going by, and they were so gracious to say how impressed they were with how this community embraces apple blossom. But maybe give us a little bit of a little anecdote here or there with their time here in Wenatchee.
Well, they absolutely loved it. We said our goodbyes last night. We all went to dinner at Garlini's, and in fact, David said to my husband, actually, he said, there's three things that I will cherish all my life. And one is my wife, one is my children, and one is this festival. They were just totally in awe of anything and everything that had to do with Wenatchee or the Apple Blossom Festival. They walked everywhere. I mean, people got used to seeing them walking all around Wenatchee and were honking at them and waving at them. I mean, they truly felt like celebrities. And then, you know, she was married three times. So her first marriage, Susan Wagner, her first marriage were these great-grandchildren. And then her second marriage was a whole other group of great-grandchildren. So all these cousins got together during the weekend and did all these festivities together, and they just absolutely had a great time. We all cried last night when we said our goodbyes, and I'm totally rewriting the history on our website of Susan Wagner, because it really wasn't just Susan. It was her husband, Ernst, that created this apple industry that we now have, and she wanted to celebrate him, and she was a go-getter. She was a businesswoman way before businesswomen were businesswomen, so I kind of want to rewrite that a little bit and make it more what really happened.
Well, as I understand, what was really kind of a one-day event in Memorial Park
right.
is stretched into 10 days and all throughout the Wenatchee Valley now, all kinds of activities. She and her husband came up with a pretty good idea.
They did, and all the grandchildren said that. They said, you know, she was a pretty amazing woman as far as being organized and detailed and a businesswoman, and they did know that about her. And they would what was the coolest thing on Saturday night was we were all in the beer garden at entertainment in the park, and there was this bald eagle that flew over the entertainment and just kind of swept through everything. And we were like, there's Granny Sue. She's watching us. She's watching over. It was right at 5:30. It was just so eerie and so awesome.
Well, I kind of wondered if, you take a day or two here and have a couple of meetings, and then, because I know you don't get much sleep during the 10-day run of the festival and certainly the lead up to it, but actually you're busy on kind of a series of post-festival meetings and all kinds of activities, actually for several weeks, so kind of what happens here until you and your staff get a little bit of a break and then start on
right.
the 101st festival, or is that already underway?
Well, it kind of is already underway. We have our year-end party for our volunteers on Wednesday the 15th, and so from now until the 15th, I will meet with every committee chairperson, and we critique all of the events that took place during the festival. And then after that, and we'll be announcing our theme for Festival 101 that night. So we already have a theme for 101. And then during the summer, we really work on the auction. So we will be looking, of course, for donations for the auction, encouraging people to attend. And then I will be working on, you know, sponsorships, renewing sponsorships, getting everybody back on track for the next festival. So really the summer is about the auction, which is October 26th. And we'll have a tailgate party theme. That's already been determined also. And then we go into mandatory meetings and pageant, and then it's here again. So we really don't have time off. Our summer is not as stressful as the rest of the year. I always say it's like being a teacher or an accountant. You know, you have very stressful months for 9 months, and then you can kind of coast through life for 3 months. So that's kind of our world.
Of course, this year you mentioned 160 odd or so returning royalty. I know that that's something you'd maybe kind of like to look at, every 10 years now.
Yeah,
maybe
we talked about that. You know, we definitely know this is something that in this grand of an effect that we will never experience in our lifetime again. But We've talked about doing every 10 years and at least bring the past royalty back. Again, it's just great for that younger generation of past royalty to be able to continue having that great experience. So we probably will do something like that.
And, of course, it was a special gala for them. That was Friday night before the Small Growers Grand Parade. So mm-hmm. there were some special events that were just kind of one of a kind. How do you go about introducing new events into the festival? How does that whole process work? And when you go through your critique, how does that process work?
Well, you know, we're always open to new ideas, of course. And anytime anybody has a new idea or a new event, we will always listen to it. Tour de Bloom is a perfect example of that. That was an event where Craig Steele and Ace Bollinger came to us and said, "Hey, we want to put this on Grand Parade Day. What do you think?" And we're like, "Okay, let's give it a try." And I think they're on their fourth or fifth year now. We like it when these new events happen and we don't have to pay for them or do the volunteering, because really for our events, we are tapped out in a lot of ways. So to create something new is kind of out of our world. But if there's another organization or somebody that has ideas, we would love to hear them and add it. But, you know, we're pretty picky about what events we want. You know, again, when Tour de Bloom came to us, we had a board meeting about it. We discussed it. It's not like we just say, "Hey, it's a great idea. Let's have you be a part of the festival." It takes a lot of time and volunteering. It's just like food vendors that come to me and say, "Hey, I want to have a food booth." And we let them in for a year. And then once they figure out how much time and energy and it takes to do it, they're out. They can't handle it. And it's kind of like that for an event. It's a lot of work.
Fabulous festival. A little windy on the Kais Fiber Youth Parade Day. You couldn't have ordered up more perfect weather for the Stemilk Growers Grand Parade. So all in all, just a fantastic festival. Saturday, there was a group that decided to bring some displays into the park, and that's did upset some of the attendees. I know that that's something that you can't control, and I know that some folks complained, can't something be done about that? And I know officially really not much you can do about that.
Right, yeah. You know, those people, they want us to throw a fit. You know, they want the attention. That's why they do what they do. And we've just learned, this isn't our first protest that's been going on during Apple Blossom. We've had many for the last 5 years. And it is sad that we aren't able to do anything, but what we've learned is to just walk away and not pay attention to them, because, you know, they want us to do that. I would love to be able to do a city ordinance or something just like we do with dogs in the park, but, you know, it's their First Right Amendment to be able to do that. Or a First Amendment right to be able to do that. And it's out of my hands. I know a lot of people were upset. I did get a few emails. But once I explained to the people that were upset the situation that we are in and that we do our best to try to make this festival as positive as we can, every single person emailed me back and said, "Thank you. We appreciate, you know, the festival, and we don't mean to take it out on you." And it is offensive, but I've, again, just learned to just kind of let it go, because that's, if you throw a fit and make a big whoop-de-doo out of it, that's what they exactly want you to do.
So we need to let you go, because I know you've got another meeting to get to as you work on festival number 101. What is your big takeaway from the 100th festival? I can imagine it's make sure you get your own copy of the big fuss about a parade.
Right.
It's the documentary that was done that celebrates kind of behind the scenes and what it takes to put on this festival each year.
No, what I take from it is, you know, just my heart is totally full. It was just For doing this for 25 years, this was by far one of my favorite festivals. And it was because everybody was just so happy. And I love that. And, Yes, you can get a DVD of the Lot of Fuss About a Parade. We have them at the festival office. You can just stop by and pick one up. Or you can order it online and we can mail it to you, whatever is most convenient for you. But they're $25 and everybody must get one because you will regret not getting one.
How many volunteers did it take to put on this 100th? I know it's hundreds and hundreds each year, but there was probably an extra core of volunteers.
You know, it's funny. It really wasn't. It wasn't any extra. You know, a lot of the people on the 100th committee, they already do other things for the festival. So really, we had the same numbers. It's just amazing. Like Elliot Salmon, he's in charge of my dignitary cars for the Grand Parade. And I just said, okay, we have 95 cars this year, so we got to come up with a different plan on how to get everybody, you know, in there. And I had a spreadsheet, I had a map. And I mean, it's just that people that always do it every year just stepped it up and did it even bigger and better for the 100th. So,
everybody.
But we have about 500 volunteers from auction to the actual festival. And again, a lot of the people that help with the auction, work in the beer garden, and people that help with pageant. I mean, my pageant guys, I have two of them right now down at the park, Gavin Geringer and Craig Field, cleaning banners, cleaning garbage cans, doing picnic tables. So a lot of the same people do the same thing, different things throughout the year.
Practice makes perfect.
Yeah, that's true. We do have a system, that's for sure. Don't mess with our system.
Well, again, congratulations on a Herculean effort. It was a wonderful festival, and thanks for coming in. And get through the next couple of weeks and enjoy some time off.
We will. We will. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Darcy. Darcy Christofferson, Festival Administrator for the Washington State Apple Blossom Festival.
Spread your wings and see the world through Travel Detective Peter Greenberg's eyes. Saturday, 7 p.m. on News Radio 560 APQ.
All right, Dave Bernstein on the agenda today. And joining us in our second half hour, we welcome Don Davies, Executive Director of the Wenatchee Valley Humane Society. And I understand you're going to throw a shower.
We are.
A kitten shower.
A kitten shower.
Tell us what that's all about.
Okay, well, I think everyone hopefully knows that every spring brings newborns. And that
Let me tell you about the birds and the bees.
Yes, right. And so we see that, especially at the shelter, with a lot of kittens. And typically what happens is that a lot of kittens are brought into the shelter without their mothers. So, and some are brought with. Some are found out in a orchard somewhere. Maybe they're find them in a barn or in their backyard under their porch. So anyway, we end up with a lot of kittens in the shelter, and that means that we have a lot of need for supplies. So we thought it would be fun to throw a shower for the newborn babies. And you can go on our website at WenatcheeHumane.org, and you can look at the kitten shower. And there's lots of different ways you can donate. There's a list on there that shows what our specific needs are for kittens. And or you can come on down to the shelter between 11 and 3 on this Saturday also.
And obviously, these are important type events because you operate on a limited budget. You're trying to make ends meet in whatever way possible. And so you're always looking for kind of a fun, creative way to do that. But this may afford an opportunity for some adoptions of kittens as well.
Right. So a lot of the kittens that come to us, it depends on the age that they are. Now, kittens cannot be spayed or neutered until they're at least 2 pounds. So a newborn kitten, some of them have to be bottle fed every hour or two until they're old enough to eat by themselves. So many times during kitten season, and this is a wonderful time to be thinking about being a foster family, because if you're interested in taking care of these little babies, it's just a temporary couple of weeks, get them healthy and big enough, and you bring them back into the shelter, and then we will give them all their vaccinations. We provide all the supplies to our foster families. So this kitten shower also helps to support those supplies that we need throughout the season. And, you know, the other interesting that we're doing right now, we're right in the process of building a nursery for kittens in our shelter. And so it is a separate room where kittens are. They're not held there long term because we are looking for those foster families.
What does it take to be a foster family? Do you have to be Obviously, I would think some degree of experience. Maybe you're not ready to adopt cats permanently, but you just kind of want to help out and take them in for what's the duration of fostering typically?
It really depends on the age of the kitten. If they're coming in a day or two old, then it's going to be, 3-4 weeks or so before they're ready, maybe a little bit longer even. We have them, you do not have to be experienced with the kitten. Even I could do this. So. Even I.
Well, I would think you're a pro.
Well, you know what? The kittens.
You're more of a dog person.
I'm better with the horses, to tell you the truth. They're way bigger. They eat by themselves. Yeah. Kittens require someone who has a lot of patience and obviously a lot of passion for the animals, of course. But, yes, because it does have to, there's very specific things. We have a cat volunteer coordinator and you can call the shelter and talk to her. Her name is Asia and she has everything laid out with all different kinds of, programs and as far as the training and the step-by-step, how to weigh a kitten, how much to feed them, what you do after you feed them, what you're looking for. And then every week, the foster family brings the kitten back to the shelter so that our staff and veterinarian can do a little health check on it, weigh it again. And we just keep constant track to make sure that it's getting enough food or, in some cases, not too much food.
And but you can help out with a kitten shower without even if you can't attend. I'm sure some donations would be most welcome, even in the form of a cash donation as well.
That's very helpful because we do have not only limited resources, but we also have limited space at the shelter for storing things. We get donations for cat and dog food, of course, and that also helps to support our food pantry that we're helping low-income pet owners when they need it on a monthly basis. But we don't always get a lot of supplies for the kittens. So that's why we have very specific needs.
Okay. And that's why there's a kitten shower again this Saturday, 11 to 2. Sounds like it'd be a fun thing to do if you're kind of thinking about some Mother's Day weekend activities.
That's a great idea.
And yeah. 11 to 2, why not? Moms love kittens, and it's a kitten shower.
And kids love kittens.
Yeah. So maybe make that part of your weekend plans. You mentioned, you're trying to help with folks that have pets but have some income challenges. There's some legislation I know that you wanted to mention that's going to, I guess, maybe make things a little bit easier for folks with their veterinary challenges for their pets as well. Maybe explain a little bit of that.
Yeah, it's a recent Senate bill. It's actually been on the table for a few years. It did pass this year. The governor signed it a couple of weeks ago. It's called Senate Bill 5004. And what that does is it allows nonprofit veterinarian, animal control agencies and such, to perform veterinarian care for income-qualified pet owners. And I want to be really specific about that because this is not a kind of clinic that we have been able to do in the past. We have been limited to providing spay and neuter, vaccination, or microchip. And just to give you an example of what this could do, last week there was an 8-year-old girl that showed up in front of the shelter and she was holding a puppy. And she asked if we had a veterinarian. Well, yes, we do. The veterinarian was doing a spay and neuter surgery, so we sent her down to Cascade. And Cascade did an amazing job. They did an exam, they did an x-ray, and they counseled the family that the puppy had several bones broken in its leg, and it really needed a surgery, worst case, amputation. Unfortunately, the family couldn't afford that service, so they had to surrender the dog to the Humane Society, which is heartbreaking. Because we're limited by what we can offer to the public for low income, we couldn't help that family. So the only thing that we could do is to intake the dog. And now we have to make the difficult decision of whether are we going to do an expensive surgery on this dog? Or are we going to amputate? It's a young dog. It has a whole life ahead of it. Animals do really well on three legs, by the way. So we did take the puppy in and it did receive an amputation last Friday. But it just kind of breaks my heart because that family, I'm sure, loved that puppy and would like to have been able to keep it, and we couldn't help it. Veterinarians in our area are amazing partners for us, and we love everything that they do. for the whole community. They've got their clientele. They have an overhead. They can't afford to give away services any more than we can, except that we generously are supported by some grants and other community members who will donate to us to help us to help people with their pets. So what this Senate bill will do will allow us, after this goes into effect in July 25th, after that, this is not an announcement yet. Our clinic is not up and running and ready to do these kinds of services, but it gives us the potential to do it in the future.
So the legislation will it provide some funding to compensate for that, or how will the legislation enable some of these services to be provided?
Yeah, it doesn't go as far as the financial part of it. It's something that, as nonprofits, it will be up to us to find the funding to be able to support that. Chances are there could be sliding fees for people. Again, they have to be income qualified, so we'll need to have some kind of proof of income. And that's going to be very carefully monitored by the legislation as well, because they want to make sure, and we want to make sure, that the right people that really need these services are the ones that are receiving the services.
But in the end, it could provide an avenue that save even a veterinarian, or in this case, that the animal may not have to be surrendered in the right scenario, as the story you just shared illustrated.
That is our goal. Our goal is to keep people and pets together and out of the shelter. It costs on average about $300 per pet just to do an intake at the shelter, to go through a 72-hour hold, all the vaccinations, the spay and neuter, the feeding, the cleaning, the upcare. So we really want to keep people and pets together. And the interesting thing is that the studies have shown that at least 80% of the pets that are looking or that need a low-income service have never, ever been to a veterinarian before. So these pets are not spayed and neutered. They're not been vaccinated. They have no rabies. So there are some health concerns that go along with that, too. But so this is for people who truly are in need of it. And we all know that pets are like our family members, right? And so how hard would it be to have to say, here, take my dog because I can't afford to the medical bill on it?
News Radio 560 KPQ 1245. And we're talking with Don Davies, who's the executive director of the Wenatchee Valley Humane Society. Take a quick break on the agenda, and we're right back with more after this.
If you love all things outdoors, prepare for a Northwestern Outdoors Experience Sundays at 7 a.m. with John Cruz on News Radio 560 KPQ.
1248, The Agenda, and Dave Bernstein in today with Don Davies, who's the executive director of the Wenatchee Valley Humane Society, and an important conference that really kind of addresses what we were just talking about, ways to help perhaps folks who would be in a situation can't care for a pet that is in need of care. And tomorrow you're going to start talking about the state of animal care with a facility such as yours. Tell us a little bit about this conference, Dawn.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. We've been planning on this for about a year, and I am on the founding board of directors of a group by the name of PAW, which is Pet Alliance of Washington, and that is made up of executive directors from shelters and animal welfare all over the state, and our mutual goal together is to get Washington State to be a no-kill state, although I prefer the term of saying a live release rate of 90% or better. And so one of the ways that we do that is that we're going to get together and we're going to talk about what all those obstacles are and being able to increase the live release rate and find all these animals' homes, or better yet, keep them in the homes that they're already at. So we have some great sponsors. In fact, this wouldn't happen if it wasn't for ASPCA stepping up and saying, yeah, go do this. So we have 135 people coming in from all over the state, and some are actually coming from Idaho, Oregon, and Montana. And we've got all kinds of speakers lined up for them to learn what's new in the medical track for nonprofit shelter veterinarians, and also just operations in general about disease control, adoption, behavior is becoming a very large topic in the animal welfare. One of the things that we're finding is that the animals that end up in the shelter now are the ones that are a little more behaviorally challenged. So there's organizations, and we're one of them, that we have a special behavior team. And they work with those animals on a day-to-day basis. They get the canine good citizen ready certificates. They do a top dog. So they're taught basic manners, sit, stay, wait at the door, don't charge people, things like that. Makes them more adoptable and obviously increases the live release rate as well. So tomorrow morning, I'm going to start out with a board meeting for about 4 hours and talk about ways that we can all work together. And then we go right into a conference. We've got a great speaker coming up from California. His name is Robert Cabral. And he founded an organization called Bound Animals and, or sorry, Bound Angels. And what they do is they work with dogs that are aggressive and get them to be adoptable. So he's going to do a demonstration. It's all going to be really wonderful.
Well, and you said about 150 attendees for this conference as well.
Close to so, that, yes.
So it's going to be right here in Wenatchee.
Right here in Wenatchee. We've even got a local sponsor. Pet Hub is one of our sponsors as well. So, yes, if you see a lot of extra people in town, many of them will have dogs. One of the reasons we're having it at the Red Lion is it is pet-friendly, and our animal welfare people love to take their pets with them where they go.
What is one of the biggest challenges? Maybe you alluded to it, is behavior. What is one of the biggest challenges to, as you call it, high live release ratio or rate?
I think the biggest challenge is that what we are faced with now in animal welfare is that when we report our data, and we all have to report it into a national database with Shelter Animals Count, and we count every animal that comes into the shelter and what its outcome was. And we want the outcome to be a live, healthy release. So what that means is that we are having to put more of our resources medically into making an animal well again, well not only physically but also mentally, which affects the behavior. So one of the things that happens in a shelter situation, it is a stressful place for animals to be. It's loud. I mean, it can be quiet for an hour. One person opens the door and walks through, and it's like all heck broke loose in there. So it's very, and animals are very sensitive. Their hearing is much more in tune than ours are. And so it's stressful. Stress can make an animal sick. And so, but it also changes their behavior. And after they've been in a shelter for a while, their behavior starts to go south a little bit. They start to get a little food aggressive, or maybe they already were food aggressive before they came in. Maybe they were surrendered because they nipped at somebody. Maybe they were surrendered because they're barking too much and the landlord said, you can't have that dog here anymore. So we get those types of animals in the shelter a little more often now, and it takes longer to treat them for whatever they're, whether it's physically, mentally, and then get them adopted again.
Well, we wish you well with the conference, and it'll be fun to hear maybe some of the results of that and the next time we have you in.
Great.
And, again, don't forget the kitten shower, by the way. That's why you have the quiet hour, by the way.
That is.
at the Humane Society, 1474 South Wenatchee Avenue. But they are open every day of the week, starting at 11 a.m. The kitten shower this Saturday from 11 till 2. Might be a fun part of your Mother's Day. Remember, it should be the whole weekend, not just Sunday.
There you go. So, Mother's weekend.
Enjoy. And thanks, Dawn. Thanks for joining us today. On the agenda, we're going to be checking in just a few minutes and get the numbers on Wall Street from the Wenatchee office of Stifel tomorrow. We're going to be talking with organizers of the 27th annual Law Enforcement Officers Awards Banquet, which is set for next Wednesday. And that's put on by the Greater Wenatchee Sunrise Lions Club. I'm going to get a chance to serve as MC for that event. So we'll tell you about that and how to get your tickets. That's coming up tomorrow on the agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ.